brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. In this podcast, we'll be discussing emerging literature spanning the full spectrum of SCI research, from discovery to clinical application. You're listening to a Community Perspectives episode with Dr. Allison Kessler. I'm your host, Marla, and today we'll be discussing two recent papers titled Breastfeeding Following Spinal Cord Injury, Consumer Guide for Mothers, and Motherhood After Spinal Cord Injury, Breastfeeding, Autonomic Dysreflexia, and Psychosocial Health Clinical Practice Guidelines, which were published in Topics in Spinal Cord Injury Rehabilitation in the Spring 2024 edition. This paper was submitted by Asia's Rehabilitation Standards Committee, and our guest today is Dr. Allison Kessler. Allison Kessler, MD, MSc, is the Section Chief of Rene Crown Center for Spinal Cord Innovation at the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab, formerly RIC, in Chicago, Illinois. She is board certified in physical medicine and rehabilitation and spinal cord injury medicine. Dr. Kessler is the Associate Director of Shirley Ryan Ability Lab's SCI Medicine Fellowship and is an Assistant Professor in the Department of PM&R at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. Welcome, Dr. Kessler.
Thanks for having me today.
Can you talk a little bit about why you agreed to participate in this project and why you feel like this project was so important?
Yeah, so this project was really spearheaded by the amazing group in Canada led by Dr. Andre Krasikov and Dr. Stacey Elliott. And I didn't mention Shay Hokalsa in the last podcast, but I want to mention her as well. I've had the privilege of working with her, and she is absolutely amazing. Nurse who works in sexual health and function as well. So this group really spearheaded putting together these consumer guides for mothers. And I was asked to be an international reviewer once they had been working on the guidelines to give feedback before it went to publication. I was so excited to be asked to be a reviewer, mostly because I was so excited that they were coming out with these guidelines, because I think that this is a really important part of spinal cord injury medicine that hasn't been highlighted well in one place before. When we look at guidelines that are out there, especially guidelines that are geared more towards the individual. So again, this is a consumer guide. And what a consumer guide means is it's not necessarily meant for the doctors and the therapists and the nurses that are working with these individuals. This is really aimed towards the person with a spinal cord injury to read about their condition and how it may affect their life in going forward. And so this consumer guideline is really aimed towards women who want to be moms and some of the issues that they may experience, especially in the postpartum period. And so I know that this is an area where many women with spinal cord injury haven't necessarily felt supported by the medical community in pursuing being a mom or pursuing pregnancy. And I think that by coming out with these guidelines and having them published for consumers, it really tells people that, hey, the medical community supports you. And if you do want to physically bear a child or breastfeed, that is something that you can do, and we're here to help.
We talk a lot on this podcast about the importance of having a team behind you, the importance of having, you know, not just one doctor or one therapist, but really a team that supports you. I think that's really highlighted well in these guidelines. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, someone with a spinal cord injury that is interested in becoming a mom and how they might help, you know, to create that team around them and who might be necessary for that team so that they can prepare themselves for pregnancy, childbirth, and after childbirth?
Yeah, so I think what's really interesting is when we look at the literature, women with spinal cord injury who choose to become pregnant and have babies tend to be pretty far out from their initial injury. And what that means is that it also might mean they don't have a, quote, regular spinal cord injury doctor anymore, especially depending on where they live, right? Maybe they went somewhere to a specialty center for their original inpatient rehabilitation, but life moves on. It's 10, 15 years later. They're living somewhere else, and they may not be following with a spinal cord injury expert anymore, and there may not be that person kind of right there to help guide them. So what I think is really important about this article is that it allows women who are exploring wanting to become pregnant a chance to read through and say, okay, who should I have on my team? Who do I need to go and seek out? And even for me, I live in Chicago. There's lots of wonderful spinal cord injury experts in Chicago, but there are still people who are living with spinal cord injury that are sort of like, oh, I haven't gone back to an SCI doctor for a long time. I've been doing fine. But this is going to be something new, right? And so I think this is a time for women to reengage people that they might need on their team. For instance, maybe they haven't done occupational therapy in 15 years since their inpatient rehab, or physical therapy, but now all of a sudden their body's changing, they're trying to figure out new tasks. It's really wonderful to have people there to support you. Let's be honest, having kids is really hard, and the postpartum period is even harder. And so having a group of interdisciplinary people around you to help you from a psychological standpoint, from a physical standpoint, from a medical standpoint, it's always easier if you can identify those people ahead of time so that you know who to call when you're having a problem versus trying to get in with someone new kind of after the issue arises.
You had mentioned before too, which was super important, is that, you know, we should be trying to provide these clinical practice guidelines to, you know, the people that are going to be caring for people with spinal cord injury. So I think, you know, if a person with a spinal cord injury comes across this episode and knows that there's clinical practice guidelines, and maybe their physician or their therapist or somebody that is going to be assisting them might not be familiar with them, to just feel empowered that, hey, you know they're there, so maybe you can even be the one to give them to your OB or give them to your, you know, primary care doc, so that they know that there's clinical practice guidelines available to them.
Absolutely. I think knowledge is power. And one of the things is that, you know, I truly believe that anybody in healthcare went into healthcare because they want to help people, right? And again, I'm using that broadly to say all of the people involved in healthcare, not just physicians. And the hard part is that many people where they trained didn't receive training in how to care for individuals with spinal cord injury. And sometimes that can be scary for practitioners to say, I'm taking care of someone, but I didn't learn that specifically. And so I think this is a time where if an individual is living in an area where maybe their practitioners don't know as much about spinal cord injury, it's a chance for them to really gain some knowledge, get some understanding, and to your point, be able to point their practitioners towards the literature to help figure out, well, how are we going to tackle this? You know, again, if you look at the consumer guidelines, it also helps point people to other resources such as pocket cards for autonomic dysreflexia that people can have with them. So if they end up in an emergency room somewhere where the individual isn't as well versed in autonomic dysreflexia, you know, they can hand them that card and say, here's a quick primer on it. And hopefully that can kind of galvanize that person to say, oh, okay, I can go look that up. I can figure out how to treat that. I can figure out how to problem solve that. And again, I think that the consumer guideline is really important because it's written in a way that's accessible to the individuals who have spinal cord injuries. And so it's written in a way that I think is accessible to everybody and easy to understand, so that when you do have questions, when you do experience some of these things at home, you can also identify them and let your physician or your clinician or your practitioner know, right? I've been taught what spinal cord injury is, or sorry, what autonomic dysreflexia is. I've been taught that breastfeeding can trigger that. Okay, I tried breastfeeding and this happened. Okay, now I know that happened. Now I need to go and talk to somebody about it, and we need to problem solve what we're going to do about it. Again, a lot of clinicians are relying on the individual to bring what's going on in their lives to them. And I think that's hard sometimes, right? It's hard for us to explain things that are going on in our body if we don't have the language to discuss it. And I think that that's what's really great about these consumer guidelines, is it gives language to everybody to be able to understand what might be going on with their body, either good or bad, and then be able to talk about it.
Can you talk a little bit about any specific resources that you've found have been helpful for people with spinal cord injuries that are either planning, you know, to become mothers, or if they're, you know, maybe in the phase that they're already pregnant? I think in the article you guys mentioned things like some YouTube videos and things like that. Is there anything specific that you found really helpful for people?
Yeah, I think think that the breastfeeding after spinal cord injury and assistive aids YouTube video is great. I think that when you look up a lot of different positioning for breastfeeding, it tends to be obviously women without spinal cord injury or are not wheelchair users, and the positioning can just be a little bit different and a little bit more difficult. And so I think that the graphics that are in the guideline give you sort of that quick snapshot, but the video really gives you a chance to see it more in action and live. And like anything in life, breastfeeding is hard and sometimes takes trial and error, and sometimes you need to go back and re-reference it. And as I said, the video is really easy to access and kind of watch real time as you're trying to get the positioning right. So I really love having the live video there.
And then, you know, one of the things that's so great about the spinal cord community is just that the support, you know, that people living with spinal cord give each other, you know, support groups, resources like that. So if somebody with a spinal cord injury is, you know, maybe talking to other mothers with spinal cord injury, is there anything, you know, that they should be aware of as in terms of their injury that might impact birth for them and motherhood for them versus another person with a different injury? For example, like the completeness of the injury, like when we're talking about that, we're meaning like the AIS A or B or C or D, or their level of injury, and we're talking about that, you know, people will hear like their C7 or T4 or whatever. You know, can you talk a little bit about how that might be different for different mothers?
Yeah, so I think that human beings are naturally social creatures. And as I said before, being a parent and being a mom is scary. And I don't know what I would have done without the people in my life to ask questions to, especially that first time you bring a baby home. It's a terrifying black box. So I think it is important for people to be able to connect with others who have been through something similar. Again, sometimes it's nice not to have to reinvent the wheel. Other women with spinal cord injuries have had babies before me, and maybe they already figured out how to do X, Y, and Z, and they can give me some tips and tricks and pointers to be able to use. The one caveat, though, is kind of what you said, and I hear this a lot from some of my patients when they say, well, I talked to so-and-so who also has spinal cord injury, and they did this. And the hard part of that is then I have to say, okay, but not all spinal cord injuries are created equal. And what I mean by that is that somebody who has, let's say, a T12 AISC spinal cord injury is going to be very different than somebody who has a T1 AISA spinal cord injury. And the tools or the adaptive devices or the medications that they're using may be different than somebody with a different level of injury. And so I think it is absolutely crucial to find a good support system. And it's wonderful to have other people who have been there before you give you some tips and pointers and things like that. But then it's really important that each individual talk with their team to make sure that those things are appropriate for them. And what I mean by that is, for instance, you know, people who have injury levels above T5 are going to be more at risk for autonomic dysreflexia, whereas somebody with a T12 injury isn't going to have that risk. Same thing, lactation will be more impaired with higher level and more complete level of injuries versus lower level of injuries where it may not be impaired at all. Spasticity is another one. Ability to change positioning, especially during breastfeeding, to be able to prevent things like pressure injuries. Again, if you have a higher level of injury, it may be more difficult to do a pressure break while breastfeeding, sitting in a wheelchair. And so maybe that isn't the best position for that individual. And so I think that the SCI community is so important for support and knowledge and ideas. But it's also really important to make sure that you're then double checking, is that right for me as an individual? And part of what I would say for that too is that going to your team and saying, you know, is this going to work for me? Is this not? Can we try it? Is a great way to ask those questions.
I think that's such an important point. And, you know, I'm not a mother, and I can only imagine that, you know, when you're preparing for pregnancy, during the pregnancy phase, after having a child, there's a lot of like, man, I want to do everything perfect. And I see somebody else doing something, and I wish I could do it that perfect, but I just can't. And then, you know, maybe there's disappointment associated with that, or, you know, just comparison associated with that. And so, you know, not only is your spinal cord injury different than the person that's next to you with a spinal cord injury, but you as a person are different than the person next to you, you know, that's having a kid. So I think that's just so important to think about yourself as an individual.
It is. And I think it's also important to remember that guidelines change over time. So for instance, when my mom had kids, right, back to sleep wasn't a big campaign. They used to put babies to sleep on their stomach, but now we know that the literature says that newborns really should be placed on their back to go to sleep. One of the ones that I hear a lot that people will recommend to moms or actually any parent with a spinal cord injury are drop side cribs. So drop side cribs seem like a great idea, right? Easy for the side to come down, will be easier for an individual to put the baby into the crib, or might be a better way for them to access the baby. But drop size cribs have been banned in both the US and Canada for a long time now, because of the risk of actually finger amputation to the baby. And so even though some people might recommend that, it's important to, again, double check some of those things with your pediatrician, with your OB-GYN, with your physiatrist, with your therapist, because those may not be the most up-to-date guidelines. And then they can help problem solve other ways that will be safer, such as co-sleepers that, you know, have a separate baby sleep area but come next to the bed. Sometimes people can then access breastfeeding inside laying position a little bit easier, but also still have a safe place for the baby to sleep.
One of the things that we wanted to highlight from both the consumer guidelines as well as the clinical practice guidelines was the autonomic dysreflexia. You know, we've talked about that on the podcast previously, and it's an important topic because of the level of, you know, potential danger that could be associated with it. Just wanted to ask, you know, what is it important for people with spinal cord injury or caregivers to be aware of in terms of, you know, AD? Is it helpful for them to know their signs and symptoms and to be aware of those things? And what particular, you know, aspects of AD are unique in, you know, pregnancy and post-pregnancy, maybe breastfeeding and things like that?
Yeah, so again, this is where knowing your level of injury is important, because autonomic dysreflexia is predominantly going to affect individuals with spinal cord injuries at or above T6. And then specifically when we're talking about breastfeeding, the T4 level is the sensory innervation of the nipples. And so above that, you're going to be even more at risk for dysreflexia during breastfeeding and other nipple stimulation. Breastfeeding is not only the only thing that can cause dysreflexia. There's also mastitis, nipple fissures, or if people are pumping, sometimes, especially if the flange isn't appropriately situated on the nipple, that can also induce dysreflexia when they're trying to pump. So I think it's important to really know if you're at risk and recognize that studies have shown that at least probably up to a quarter of women with spinal cord injury are going to experience AD while breastfeeding. And the number is even higher when we're talking about those higher level cervical injuries. One of the studies in, I think it's 2018 by Holmgren, showed up to 40%. So it isn't a small risk. It's a, you know, pretty common thing. And then it's important to understand what are the signs and symptoms of it, right? Not everybody's going to feel the blood pressure be high, but they may feel the other things. So they may have the headaches, the sweating, heart palpitations. And it's important to think about if you're at risk for it, it might be worth getting a home blood pressure cuff, checking your blood pressure during these different situations to see if there's a rise in blood pressure so that it can be appropriately treated.
Yeah. And is there, you know, the group here has written, you know, clinical practice guidelines and consumer guidelines. Is there anything that you hope the SCI community at large can take away from these two papers or take away from this, you know, journal in general?
As I said earlier, knowledge is power. It is essential that both clinicians taking care of individuals with spinal cord injuries and those of us living with spinal cord injury are aware of some of the things that can and are going on with our bodies. And I think preparation is always better than trying to problem solve down the line. So for any individual who wants to have a baby, you're going to do tons of reading about the pregnancy and you're going to do tons of reading about that, but don't forget about after the baby is there. And I think that that's one of the biggest things that excites me about these two guidelines being published, is that a lot of literature before this has really focused on the pregnancy aspect or even the getting pregnant part, but not a lot of literature has looked at what happens after the baby comes home. And I think these guidelines are great for both clinicians and for people living with spinal cord injury to prepare for before the baby comes home, so that you can have the necessary equipment, have the necessary resources, and also have the knowledge to be able to identify when things maybe aren't going the way that you want them to, so that an intervention can be made.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being here. And we definitely encourage everyone to check out the Topics in Spinal Cord Injury Rehab journal from the May 2024. And I really appreciate you being here, Dr. Kessler. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCI Science Perspectives, brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. The paper discussed in this episode was chosen based on the recommendation of Asia's Rehabilitation Standards Committee. The podcast is made possible by the leadership of Dr. Suzanne Groh, your producer hosts David McMillan and Marla Petrillo, our editor and production assistant Abby Fox, and Asia's front office. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, please contact us at SCIPerspectivesPodcast@gmail.com.